or the guidance of the people into the right path. They're saving them from the hellfire and helping them to get closer to Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Yes.
Helping them to become good people, the righteous people, the true believers, mu'mineen, and save them from the hellfire and send them to Jannah and guide them to the right path. This is the main objective of the revelation wahi. And also the imamate and ilm of the imam should be at the service of the people in this way. So we should look at this knowledge of the imam from this perspective, that can this knowledge of the prophets and imams guide the people to the right path, guide the people to the right way or not, save the people from the hellfire or not, help them to get closer to Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, taqarrub ila Allah or not. If it works in this field, then their knowledge and their science worked and there is no any problem with their sciences.
Yes.
This is the first point, that absolutely, of course, this hidayah, this divine guidance that are brought to us by the prophets and the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salatu wasalam, they did work, and if someone follow them, they will be saved from the hellfire and they will get the proximity to Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and the perfection. This is the first point. The second point is that even when it comes to these, let's say, experimental sciences, that we have a saying from Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salatu wasalam, that once imams asked the people that, please ask me your questions about, for example, let me say that he said that, I know the ways of the heaven, I know the knowledge of the heavens.
Yes.
More than the knowledge of what you have in about this worldly life or earth and world. And then you see that the people asked him very, let's say, strange kind of questions, very meaningless kind of questions. It shows that the people were not prepared, were not ready to receive this sort of knowledge from the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salatu wasalam. Otherwise, Imam Ali salatu wasalam told them that Saluni qabla an tafqiduni.
Yes.
Ask me before I die, before you lose me. But of course, the people, because the people were illiterate, the people were not, let's say, fully knowledgeable people, that's why they did not refer to the Imam alayhim for these sort of things. This is the first point. The second point is that among the students of Ahlul Bayt, among the students of Imam al-Baqir, Imam al-Sadiq, we have great scientists, Jabir ibn Hayyan, and many other, let's say, scientists we have in the history, that they are the students of Ahlul Bayt alayhim salatu wasalam. They got this knowledge, and later their knowledge transmitted to the other generations of the scientists. Finally, it led to a kind of discoveries in the history, because these discoveries that are made by the scientists are not out of nothing.
Yes.
The knowledge that were transmitted to these scientists, to the previous generations of these scientists, it paved the ground for all these discoveries and improvement in different fields of studies.
That's right. IRIB English Radio presents Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs. Answering your theological questions in Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs. Send us your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
Praises to Allah, all glory is to Allah, we worship Allah, and no one but Allah.
And the serious question is that, were really imams selected to solve the scientific problems of the people? There was Imam of Hidayah and the guidance for the people. It is as if the book of Quran is not the book to answer our scientific questions. It is a book of hidayah. I think imams, as the true followers of Prophet Muhammad and the Holy Quran, were also so, isn't it, Shaykh?
You know, we have two dimensions in our, let's say, existence. One is the immaterial aspect of our existence, and the other one is the material aspect of our existence. When it comes to the immaterial aspect, we need to a kind of heavenly and divinely kind of guidance and knowledge that should be given to us through wahi, revelation, and through the Ahl al-Bayt, Aimma alayhim salatu wasalam, which is a divinely kind of source of knowledge.
Yes.
So this knowledge is beyond our normal, or let's say natural kind of knowledge and sciences. And when it comes to the material aspect, to the physical and bodily kind of aspect of our existence, whatever knowledge that we need in this respect, we can acquire it.
Okay.
We can attain it by our sensation, by our sensory knowledge, or sensory, let's say, faculties. And our aql, our intellect, is able to attain this knowledge, to achieve this knowledge. That's why Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala provided us with all with the means that we need to attain this kind of knowledge, and he provided us with aql, with intellect, with mind, with brain, and he enabled us to solve these sort of problems by ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem that we cannot solve is that immaterial, let's say, aspect of life, that the problems that goes beyond the nature, goes beyond this let's say physical world, which is immaterial, which is transcendent kind of knowledge. What we need is this sort of knowledge that should be brought to us by the prophets through wahy and revelation.
Yes.
But this kind of experimental or empirical kind of things that you mentioned, human being can solve them.
Yes.
By our own, let's say, intellect, by our own brain, by our own these sensory kind of faculties. We should not forget that, of course, in the history we have had some prophets who also provided people with this sort of knowledge as well, like Prophet Sulaiman alayhi salam, and the other prophets, Prophet Khidr, for example, Prophet Idris, and the other prophets. It is mentioned because now some of the scholars are of the view that whatever types of sciences and knowledge, pieces of knowledge that we have, the main sources for all these types of knowledge are the prophets.
Yes.
Because the prophets were the first teachers of the mankind, and they actually taught the people, and they actually brought the knowledge for the people. Then those knowledge in the history, through the history, expanded and extended into different fields of studies. That's why the main source of knowledge of the mankind are all divinely kind of sources, according to, let's say, Islamic kind of principles and teachings. But of course, since man are able to enhance, to extend these sort of studies and knowledge by their own selves, then they do not need to any kind of divinely, or let's say, heavenly sort of sources for these sort of knowledge.
That's all right. And as you said, the golden age of the Islamic developments in science, we can say, was filled of experts from the lands of Persia and Iraq and Syria, we can say in Yemen, who helped very much in order to develop science in different fields of studies. Al-Haytham, Al-Khwarizmi, we can say Al-Biruni, At-Tusi, you know.
Yeah, of course.
These are not simple names. And all the modern developments were created on the shoulders of such developments.
Exactly. They owe to these scholars.
They owe to these scholars on that time. But at the same time, as I said, the Aimmas and the infallible Imams had direct role in guiding the hearts and the souls of the people of their time. And most of the time, the people referred to them, even the scientists referred to them, in order to get answers to this spiritual, it's better to say, developments, spiritual growth at their time. And they were the Imams of Hidayah rather than the Imam of Science or something like that. And if we consider religion as a specialized field of study, Shaykh, for sure, Aimmas were the experts.
Exactly.
For example, we know that.
Of course, they did have the knowledge.
Yes. Fiqh, Quran, Imam Ali alayhi salam, Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam helped the king of his time to coin the first Islamic coin for the trademarking, you know, on that time, because the coins were Romans. So now that the we can say the signs were changed into the Islamic ones by the help of Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam, Imam Ali alayhi salam, Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam. They had knowledge on different fields of studies, Islamic sciences, hadith, you know, history of Islam, Quran, and so on. So these can be considered as a scientific help of the Imams too, isn't it?
Yes, of course. You know that, as I mentioned, there are many scholars, many scientists in the history that their teachers, their previous generations of their teachers, will go to the Imam al-Sadiq and Imam al-Baqir, alayhim salatu wassalam. That's why at the time of these two great Imams, the different fields of studies were there, and the different kind of students from across the Islamic world were there. Among them were muhaddisin, let's say, among them were fuqaha, among them were theologians, among them were also scientists. So that's why these scientists also later, they improved and perfected the different fields of studies by the help of A'imma alayhim salatu wassalam. As you rightly mentioned, the Islamic civilization in the 4th and 5th century was the most, let's say, powerful and developed and perfect kind of civilization in the whole world, which were established by Muslims by the help of Islamic teachings and doctrines, which is based on the teachings and doctrines of the Quran, Prophet, and Ahlul Bayt alayhim salatu wassalam.
That's all right. Thank you very much, Sheikh, for a nice elaboration regarding this topic.
You're welcome.
And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Khan of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanullah.
Inna fi al-jannati nahran min Ali wa Hussein wa لعلي وحسين وحسان إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسان لعلي وحسين وحسان كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن
يوسف جلالي بتهران
إروباشافت غازا
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Pureza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
With a military parade, Hezbollah marked International Quds Day in Lebanon, where hundreds of Lebanese and Palestinians raised their fists in a show of support for the resistance group and its leader. Hezbollah Secretary General underscored the significance of the Lebanese front and raised his voice in response to the Israeli threat, saying, "The resistance in Lebanon is fully prepared for any war."
The resistance in Lebanon does not fear war. It has managed battle in the last 6 months with a clear strategy and a vision which is complementary to the ongoing battle in the region. The resistance has managed the battle in a manner that would lead to victory while protecting Lebanon. However, it is fully prepared morally, mentally, and militarily for any war which the enemy would regret having launched against Lebanon.
Hezbollah's leader downplayed the ability of the Israeli regime to launch a full-scale war on Lebanon with the fact that it is extremely exhausted and has achieved none of its declared objectives except for the killing of innocent women and children. And despite the sacrifices, he said, the alliance of resistance is on the path to a historic and major victory.
Based on logic and political, military, diplomatic, regional, international, and economic information, we are able to see very clearly what the leader of the Iranian Revolution had said during the first days of the war, that Israel will be defeated and that Gaza will be victorious, and Netanyahu will have no choice but to stop the war, which will be a historic and major victory for the resistance in the region.
A significant part of the speech touched upon the Iranian role in supporting the resistance factions and the oppressed people of the region. It also confirmed that the Iranian response to the Israeli attack on the consular section of the Iranian embassy in Damascus will certainly come, and that everyone needs to be ready for what may lie ahead after this retaliation.
We are very close to a victory, since the blood that has been shed in Gaza and Lebanon and from all our brothers will be fruitful. This is why this year is exceptional, and it has a very positive impact on our hearts and has given us hope that a big victory is possible.
It's not just the duty of Muslims to take part in Al Quds Day, but also as human beings all over the world, since it proves their humanity.
We are here not to support just Gaza, we are supporting all Palestine, the resistance in all region will elaborate Palestine and Al-Quds, and we will win, inshallah.
Hezbollah's leader also noted that Al-Aqsa flood has put Israel's existence in danger and exposed its vulnerabilities, and those who should be ashamed are the ones who have normalized ties with Israel.
Al-Quds Day this year is distinct on all levels. Loud actions have been made, not only in support of the Palestinian people, but in establishing what could turn into a tangible plan to end the occupation of the Holy Land. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
The International Quds Day this year comes following Israel's airstrike on the consular section of Iran's embassy in Damascus that killed 7 Iranian military officers. This latest Israeli attack, together with over 6 months of regime's genocide in Gaza, prompted thousands of Iranians to pour into the streets across the country to mark Quds Day.
Recently, there was an incident in which we were all heartbroken and devastated, as 2 of the top Iranian generals were killed and our country's embassy was air targeted. This act was against international and human rights law. As an Iranian and a Jew, we condemn this issue.
Quds Day is commemorated all over the world on the last Friday of Ramadan. It is a day of international solidarity with the Palestinian people. Just like previous years, the Iranian Jew community also joined other protesters to express their support for Palestinians in Gaza. This community believes that the United Nations and the Western countries have been totally inactive over the ongoing genocide in the Gaza Strip.
We are not anti-Semites, but we are anti-crime, we are anti-killing, and in one word, we are anti-Zionist. And we live in peace with each other in Iran, with Jews, but we don't have any problem with Jews. We have problem with genocide, with killing, with Zionists.
We send a message to all young and free people around the world that humanity is in danger today. Hear our voice, our belief, and our goal. Down with Israel.
This year, the International Quds Day comes amid the ongoing Israeli onslaught on Gaza. Israel has cut off fuel, electricity, food, and water to Palestinians living in the besieged territory.
Iranians once again resonated voices of solidarity with Palestinians on International Quds Day and also strongly condemned the recent criminal acts of the Israeli regime leading to the martyrdom of 2 senior Iranian military personnel. When it comes to violation of human rights, nobody can stay silent. Fateh Masumi, Tehran.
Thousands flooded the streets across Pakistan to denounce the United States and Israel for their war crimes in Gaza.
The US is a terrorist state. Israel is a terrorist regime. They are spreading terrorism against innocent men, women, and children in Gaza through their relentless attacks. The US and Israel are using their military might to systematically oppress and kill innocent Palestinians in Gaza.
protesters marking Quds Day voiced their unwavering solidarity with the Palestinian people in their struggle against the Israeli occupation.
Israel is a fascist and illegitimate regime that is committing war crimes in Gaza by killing innocent men, women and children on daily basis. The end of Israel is necessary to maintain peace in the world.
Amid chants condemning Israel and the United States, speakers criticized what they called the criminal silence of the world on Israel's war crimes in Gaza.
We demand from the governments, from the Muslim governments, especially the government of Pakistan, to take tactical actions. Just lip service is not enough. Just passing resolutions is not enough. Governments should take practical steps for the security of the people of Gaza.
Quds Day is an annual event observed on the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan across the world to express solidarity with the Palestinians.
International Quds Day rallies in Pakistan are a manifestation of a solidarity with the Palestinians. The rallies are also a show of unity among Muslims worldwide. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
Under the title Flood of the Free, thousands of Syrians and Palestinians along with regional resistance forces rallied in their Mook Palestinian refugee camp in Damascus to commemorate International Quds Day. A joint military parade was organized by the Palestinian resistance as a message of strength and determination.
The commemoration of International Quds Day this year comes after Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, which constituted a strategic shift in the war against the Zionist enemy. It also comes amid the legendary resilience in the Gaza Strip, under the devastating onslaught and the cohesion among all resistance movements participating in this operation.
The Al-Mook camp has witnessed violent battles against terrorism. And today, from the same liberated camp, Syria, Iran, Hezbollah and Palestine vow to keep fighting until the liberation of all occupied territories from the grip of the Israeli terrorist regime and its sponsors. After the military parade, speeches were delivered by representatives of resistance movements.
Today we commemorate International Quds Day, which coincides with the ongoing Israel attacks for the past 6 months on our Palestinian people in Gaza, resulting in a significant number of martyrs and wounded, mostly women and children. The resistance continues and will prevail, and we confirm our absolute support for the resistance both logistically and politically.
Representatives of the resistance praised the profound strategic vision of the founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, who declared the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan as Quds Day. They say this vision was the cornerstone of the resistance front alliance with Palestine as its compass.
This is not from today. Since 1979, Imam Khomeini set this day for us to gather every year to the support of Palestine, liberation of Palestine from river to sea, and also for the support for all the oppressed people all over the world.
Quds Day has proven to be more than just a celebratory occasion. It is a day that unifies people and brings them together around the Palestinian cause.
The crowds that gathered in solidarity with Gaza to commemorate this day have proven the wisdom of the Islamic Revolution in Iran by establishing an international day for Al-Quds as a constant reminder for the Palestinian cause. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
Thousands of protesters have flocked to central London on the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan to honour the call of International Quds Day. The annual event was established by Imam Khomeini, the founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, in 1979 to express solidarity with the Palestinians and inculcate a Muslim-led opposition to Zionism.
With the ongoing genocide in Gaza unfolding before the world's eyes, this year's protest has taken on extra significance and emotion. It's because people are standing up to a Zionist supremacist entity which has thus far murdered over 33,000 people while still not being able to destroy the capabilities of the resistance.
Due to its popularity, many attempts have been made by pro-Israel groups to ban the Al-Quds rally, and this year these lobbying efforts fall within the wider context of Zionists and their agents at the top of government trying to get all Palestine marches banned since last October, efforts that have thus far been resisted by police and other elements within the establishment. Those on the march steadfastly reject any attempts to ban it.
It's very contradictory in a country that promotes freedom of speech around the world, human rights and democracy around the world. They want to stop people from protesting, not only these issues, but many other issues. And it's our duty as citizens of this country and the West to continue supporting through democratic means and protest the cause of Palestine.
When you look at the counter-demonstrators, they're a hopscotch of people, Zionists, far-right, British nationalists and so on and so forth, extreme right, nasty elements of British society. They're all on that side. So if you want to ban anyone, ban that lot. We're very representative of British society, especially London society. We're white, black, green, brown, every religion, every colour you can imagine, we're all here.
I'm here to show solidarity with the people in Gaza especially who are suffering genocide, and also show solidarity with our brothers and sisters of all faiths and none who are calling upon our government to uphold international law.
The people of Gaza have won the admiration of the world with their steadfastness against this unprecedented genocide, but as they stand on the brink of a deliberate famine engineered by the Zionist entity, it has scarcely been as important for the voice of the world at rallies like Al-Quds Day to shout loudly for justice and liberation for Palestine. Issa Kadhimi, London.
Down with America, down with Israel. From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. These were some of the slogans that reverberated across Indian-administered Kashmir to commemorate the International Quds Day. Thousands of people, including women and children, poured onto the streets across the region after Friday prayer in a show of solidarity with Palestinians. Holding banners and placards, the protesters condemned Israel's war crimes committed against Palestinians in Gaza Strip.
6 months of war has seen unprecedented destruction in Gaza, where houses have been knocked down and hospitals bombed. Thousands of children have been killed, relief workers attacked. The onslaught on Palestinians has shaken the conscience of humanity. This wanton killing and destruction must stop.
People cutting across religious divide have come out today to condemn Israel's genocide in Gaza. Innocent children are being killed every day. It's high time Muslim world and those who believe in humanity unite against Israel's atrocities.
The protesters denounced what they call the criminal silence of the international community over the mass killings of Palestinians. They also condemned Israeli deadly airstrikes on Iranian embassy's consular building in Syria. Since Israeli regime began its onslaught on October 7, more than 33,000 people have been killed.
I want to call on international community to play their critical role in getting Palestinians their inalienable right to life. Also, I call on the religious class of the world, including Pope Francis, that humanitarian ceasefire should be implemented in the occupied territory of Gaza, and Palestinians should be given unrestricted access to the life-saving aid. And I call on Palestinian people that not only the day of Quds, we are with you every day, and call on that we will stand with you by thick and by thin.
The protesters also urged the Indian government to intervene and help restore peace in Gaza. Ever since the founder of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini, declared the last Friday of Ramadan as International Quds Day, every year millions of people across the world take to the streets on this day to remind people of the Palestinian cause.
As part of International Quds Day, people here in Kashmir have held rallies to express solidarity with the people of Palestine amid the genocidal onslaught in Gaza. The protesters called on the international community to break its silence and unite against Israel. Said Ali Safir, Indian-administered Kashmir.
Tempers are running high in Pakistan over Israel's onslaught in Gaza. In a dramatic incident, a KFC restaurant in Pakistan-administered Kashmir was set ablaze during an anti-US-Israel protest. Following the incident, police detained over 50 individuals who were accused of attacking the restaurant in the Mirpur district.
We do not support the burning of KFC, but we want to boycott it as it is in support of genocide. We stand with boycott and we do boycott. We do not want them, we just want them not to fund Israel and help them in their genocide.
The arson comes as US-Israeli genocide in Gaza shows no signs of abating. The regime's attacks on all areas of the besieged territory, including hospitals, schools and aid convoys, continue.
We are already seeing the impact on the economy, on the financial decline of McDonald's and boycott. It's huge. Even in some countries, in Arab countries, those outlets are being closed because nobody is buying it.
Free! Free!
The ongoing genocide in Gaza has fueled anger and frustration among people worldwide, prompting calls for boycotts against entities believed to support Israel financially or politically.
Boycott is something that we are, this is what we feel from our heart, from inside, that we don't want to support their economy. We don't want to support the companies that are supporting the Israeli soldiers. So for that, we need to boycott. I know this is not a permanent solution, but we have to boycott.
Authorities are now faced with the challenge of managing the fallout from the incident and preventing further escalation of tensions.
As tempers run high in Pakistan due to the call for boycotting pro-US and pro-Israeli brands, the targeted destruction of a KFC restaurant represents a symbolic reaction of the people, both locally and globally, against US-Israeli genocide in Gaza. Nasik Azmi, Islamabad.
Israeli newspaper Maariv published an article saying Turkey is seeking to enhance relations with Israel. Turkish Agency for Combating Disinformation denied the claims in a statement. The agency said the claim in the Israeli media that senior Turkish officials sent a message saying we want to improve relations with Israel is not true. Turkey said its temporary charged affair of Turkish embassy to Tel Aviv was summoned on the 25th of March, and that claims by Israeli media that Ankara proposed that the two countries' ambassadors return mutually is not correct. The thing that forced Ömer Çelik, AK Party spokesperson, to point out Israeli crimes in a statement to assure that his government stands against what Israel is doing.
The dead human bodies and corpses found around the Shifa Hospital in Gaza once again clearly show the genocide committed by Israel. It is necessary to implement the ceasefire decision in the Gaza Strip.
This subject has been considered sensitive for Turkey, especially after the ruling party lost the local election. Many analysts suggested one of the reasons was the AKP government not fully cutting ties with Israel. Many voters left notes on electoral papers such as, "You sold Gaza, we will sell you as well." And "We will not vote for a government that does not cut a trade with Israel."
"I am studying in the UK, but I came back here to cast my vote because I strongly oppose trading with Israel and want it to stop. I actively participate in rallies in the UK and personally boycott companies and products that support Israel. I believe that every penny spent on these entities translates into bullets that target Palestinians. And I am committed to taking action to support their cause.
Overall, trading with other countries is generally acceptable. However, considering the recent aggression on Gaza, Israel has demonstrated a disregard for international laws. Therefore, I believe that trade should be temporarily halted and all ports closed to convey to Israel the gravity of its actions. Israel's persistent aggression, disregard for United Nations resolutions and human rights, and obstructions of aid delivery necessitate a strong response. Turkey provides essential materials to Israel, such as copper, cement, iron, and food. Therefore, if Turkey were to halt trade, Israel might retaliate in kind.
Turkish citizens have been taking to the streets since the beginning of the aggression on Gaza, demanding an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. They have also called on the government to sever all ties with Israel. Analysts say the public want to send messages to the president through rallies and social media campaigns. However, it seems Erdogan is turning a deaf ear to their calls for action. Erdogan, who tried to contain his people with the pro-Palestinian rallies and slogans, now finds himself not only criticized for double standards, but also grappled with losses in local elections. Rahşan Saglam, Istanbul.
Thank you.
in this journey. This is the Heart of Life pounding. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The situation in Rafah is overwhelmingly catastrophic as an estimated 1.5 million people remain crammed in a patch of land that was home to 250,000 before the war. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, Mustafa and his family have been uprooted many times over the past 6 months. The first displacement occurred when the Zionist regime bombarded Arimal, a neighborhood of Gaza City. The family's home was destroyed as a result. The family went to stay with relatives in Jabalia refugee camp. The relatives' home was also attacked. The family then took shelter at a school run by the UN Agency for Palestine Refugees. It too came under fire. The family were having one meal per day at most in the north. As the time went on, they could not find any food at all. Mustafa did not want to leave the northern part of Gaza, but starvation forced us to flee, he said. And so the family headed to Deir al-Balah in central Gaza. The house in which they found shelter that was attacked by Israel within a few weeks of their arrival. Now, the family are in Rafah, Gaza's southernmost city. They are staying in a relative's home. Mustafa is deeply worried by the Zionist regime's repeated threats to conduct a major ground offensive in Rafah. If such an offensive occurred, he doesn't know where the family could live. He said, I think we would have to go to our graves. We would have no other choice. Hamza similarly had to leave Gaza City. He and his family moved to Khan Yunis, southern Gaza, during the all-too-brief truce at the end of November. The family were staying in a tent near Nasser Medical Complex, where the Zionist regime ordered the evacuation of the area in January. The hospital is one of many to have been besieged by the Zionist regime. Following the evacuation order, the family walked to Rafah. They are among the vast numbers of people now living in tents, Hamza said. The situation is catastrophic in Rafah. There are vegetables in the markets, but their prices have hit the roof. So we can only eat canned food, which doesn't give us the nutrition we need. He added, we have already lost several kilos in weight. I wonder how much more we will lose when Israel undertakes a ground invasion and leaves us with little access to food and water. We could die from starvation. Soher is a mother of three. She has paid tens of thousands of dollars to a company arranging travel for people from Gaza. The money had been earned from her work in digital marketing. She said, "I have spent most of my savings so that my children and I can survive." She's now waiting to see her family appear on a list of people permitted to leave Rafah and enter Egypt. It can take a month between handing over money and being granted the required authorization for travel. Soher does not know what she would do if the Zionist regime launches a major ground offensive in Rafah before her family is allowed to travel. A major offensive against Rafah would result in the same type of wholesale destruction that the Zionist regime has inflicted on other areas, Soher predicts. She said, "We will die if we stay. There will be massacres and starvation everywhere." Meanwhile, Middle East, I wrote, in Gaza, if you get sick, you either wait for God's mercy or wait for your death. There is little to nothing by way of treatment. If every Palestinian in Gaza spoke about their loss and suffering, the sea would run dry before these stories could end. We have lost our cities and towns with their memories, streets, schools, mosques, and churches, a Palestinian in Gaza said. Both Gaza's history and present are being wiped out. In the heart of every challenge lies the seed of hope, and amid every tragedy, the strength of resilience and willpower shines through. Despite the many wounds, Gaza's story remains full of tenderness, strength, and hope. Gaza has faced the harshest conditions, yet it has not surrendered or stopped dreaming of a better tomorrow. In each of its people lies the courage of a struggle and a desire to build a future that restores Gaza's charm and peace. Resilience and determination to live with dignity burns within Gaza residents. And with each passing day, hope is somehow maintained and the will to move forward grows despite all the hardships.
Start.
Movement.
Stay.
Live in hope.
Toward the pit.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station. Youth Station.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Youth Station, Choo Choo Kachoo. It's Youth Station for you. I'm your humble co-host, Muzaffar Haider.
And I am Asma.
How are you doing, Sister Asma?
Well, it's fine. Well, we're having a lot to talk about.
Yeah?
Yes.
What have you been up to? It's Ramadan, so we're like
Yes, of course, but then still life is an ongoing process, so we have to think about everything, especially in Ramadan.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if it happens to you as well or not, but sometimes it happened to me to think about this very point that why are we as human beings do not get satisfied with anything? Like, in hardships, when everything, when the hustles and bustles are done and we're over it, and like you are past all of these difficulties, then there comes this peaceful condition. And then in those peaceful condition, again, you feel like you need some suspense in your life, some more of adventure, some more of excitement. You're not satisfied with anything.
You're asking the wrong person. I go through that every day. I wonder for myself, what am I doing at home or at work or whatever other mundane activity I'm partaking in? And I'm thinking, why am I not off on an adventure on a ship or fighting with pirates or, you know, battlefield somewhere? Yes. You know, where's the adventure in my life?
So, but do you think about the aftermath of that adventure? Like, when you are put in that adventurous situation, would you be satisfied with it? Or no, you would feel like, okay, I want to be back at home. I want my peaceful.
That's a good question. Yeah, I'd probably be like, I probably want to be back at home.
Yeah.
It's that old saying, isn't it? The grass is always greener on the other side.
Yeah.
You know, so it doesn't matter where you are. You're always going to see something else as greater. And that's why satisfaction with Allah is so important.
Mm-hmm.
Once you have that satisfaction with Allah, once you have that, you know, sense of tranquility and thankfulness for whatever situation you are in, that's when your life will actually progress. Until then, you're always going to be in this state of dissatisfaction.
Yeah, there is this paradoxical feeling in us as human beings. Like, just as I said, when it's war, we want the peace. When it's peace, we want the war.
Yeah.
Like, as I am just saying, it's so paradoxical and sometimes it's so annoying to think about it.
In movies and stories, they always show that the character is the main character, the protagonist, who is probably they're always depicted in a state of satisfaction, and then that satisfaction is snatched from them, and they have to join. Like, for example, it'll be a farmer or something, and he's really happy, he's got a wife and kids.
And then there's a quest, they have to go for that quest.
Exactly.
And then life changes, and then again, we come to the moment of equilibrium, and then again, that cycle has to be broken.
Yep.
Every now and then.
It's the whole narrative theory behind it. Is I feel like when you study narrative theory, because we're both English literature students, right? It's really fascinating because people don't realize this. They think, they think it's not just stories. When we're studying narrative theory, we're actually studying the theory of life itself. And there is a reality behind what we are reading in the novel and what is reflected in the outside world, what we're actually experiencing. So, for example, one of the things that we learn in narrative theory is the thing that you just pointed out, that there's always an equilibrium, then a disruption of that equilibrium, and then a new equilibrium is established.
Exactly.
And it's always like that. Now, even if you just zoom out and look at our existence, that is the case, because you're going to be born into this world, and then you're tested, right? The disruption of the equilibrium takes place, and then eventually, you know, in the hereafter, you're going to get a new equilibrium, a new existence.
Exactly.
And that is going to reflect what you've done throughout this journey of life. So it's really profound in that sense, and I really love to think about it. And a lot of the ways that I understand life, the universe, and everything is that we're simply players. You know, as Shakespeare said, that the world's a stage and we are but the players. We really are just characters in this epic story being written by the greatest of creators, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Exactly, yeah. That's why I love literature. It actually reflects us. Every single individual who's living in this world has been reflected in all those books, among those papers and words. So just as you mentioned, all the stories, they either start from the equilibrium that has to be disrupted, or they're going to start from disruption that are going to end in equilibrium. So as we have it in the Holy Book of Quran as well, إِنَّمَا الْعُسْرَ يُسْرَ, after all difficulties, there is this tranquility and there is this peaceful moment that you're going to achieve. So it's both hopeful, and at the same time, sometimes when you get to that peaceful condition of your life, maybe it will turn you into a different person, like you will get used to this silence and this peace, which is not always good. So we have to go for a break, and then after we come back, we'd pursue our discussion.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Yes. Yes, you're listening to Youth Station and we're talking about why us as human beings do not get satisfied with anything. Like whenever it is equilibrium, we're just searching for a disruption. Whenever it's disruption, we're searching for an equilibrium. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of paradoxical in what we want.
Yeah.
And that's the nature of life, I suppose. Let's just bring an example from the ordinary life. Like whenever you have too much of works to be done at your workplace, or whenever you have a lot of courses to study for your exams, after that hard times are over, then you feel like you're missing all those fightings, all those wars and conflicts.
Yeah.
But then when you're back to those conflicts, you feel like, okay, how much I miss my comfort zone.
I
would love to go back.
It's, for example, age as well. Right. However, once you pass the age of 30, right,
mm-hmm.
you start to look back and you're like, I wish I was 25, or I wish I was 26, wish I was 27. But the reality is that, I don't know, I looked it up and apparently people always want to be a certain age. And that certain age, can you guess what it is? When they ask older people, which age would you like to be?
No, I'm personally myself, I always miss my childhood.
Really? Well, they say it's 36. 36 is like that idea. I know, it's so strange,
right.
Isn't it? I don't know. Well, I guess we'll know once we get there, but inshallah. But yeah, so it's always about this discontent with where we are. And that's where a lot of this inner peace, you know, Islam is all about that peace, right? It's not just peace in the general sense, like, you know, we say, oh, it's a peaceful religion. No, it's not just talking about that. It's about acquiring this inner tranquility, this satisfaction with mm-hmm. the decree of Allah. It's absolute submission to the will of Allah.
And how is it achieved? Now, that's the question.
Yeah, that's the exact question. But it's about, you know, complete. It's not just submission as in my actions are submitted to Allah, but my heart is submitted as well. And that's why you have a personality like Imam Ridha alayhi salam, who's completely, his name means the satisfied. He's in acceptance of what's happening in his life. He understands fully and completely that this is the will of Allah.
Yeah, and contentment.
It's complete contentment.
The last key, I guess, in our lives, like we're not content with anything that happens to us and with anything that we have. There's nothing that would make us feel like, okay, this is the absolute contentment that I must have in my life.
I mean, look at the story of Prophet Ayyub, right? Prophet Ayyub was a really thankful servant of Allah. Shaitan says to Allah, well, of course he's thankful, of course he's worshipping you, because he's got everything. He's got a wife, he's got kids, he's got crops, he's got a farm, he's got respect. Let me be in control of his life. And then we'll see if he really still stays a true servant. So Allah agrees. Shaitan takes control of Ayyub's life, alayhi salam. And what Shaitan does is he kills Ayyub's, he doesn't himself do it, but the point is that Ayyub loses his wife, he loses
everything,
his kids, he loses his crops,
him.
He loses his health. He becomes very, very sick. And even when he is absolutely sick, and this hadith is actually, you know, it's debated, but I still want to state it because it still, you know, hints at that complete ridaya, that complete satisfaction. He was so ill that he had worms on his body.
Mm-hmm.
And long story short, he never prayed for health. He never prayed for, whatever befell him, he was thankful for it. He was like, Alhamdulillah, Allah, this is your test and I fully accept it. But there came a point where his people actually came to him and said, we doubt your prophethood. How can you be the prophet if you're suffering
this much?
At this point, Ayyub, out of the mercy of Allah, he says, oh Allah, my people are actually going to go astray, please restore my blessings to me. And at that point, all of his blessings are restored to him.
The miracles.
Yeah, he got his children back, his wife back, his crops back, his mm-hmm. health back, and everything else.
Oh,
Imagine if we could train ourselves to be really thankful for whatever situation we're actually in. Like right now, I'm sitting opposite you. I could be thinking, well, why can't I be having a coffee or sitting at home playing a video game with,
your favorite,
some kind of food.
Your favorite thing to do.
It's like Ramadan is such a perfect analogy for this entire thing, because the whole day you're thinking, what's your favorite food?
My favorite food, it depends on my mood.
I knew you were going to give some sort of answer like that. Anyway, my favorite food is spaghetti bolognese, right? And I could spend all day just waiting for spaghetti bolognese, but when you actually get to iftar time, you can have like two bites and you're done.
Yeah.
And then you're thinking, oh, now I just feel stuffed and I want to go and lie down. You're never really satisfied. I think I'm most satisfied when I'm sleeping.
That's the nature of life, I guess.
The Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam, he said something beautiful. He said, if you doubt that you are going to die, try to stay awake. As much as you try, you're eventually going to go to sleep. And then he said, if you doubt that you're going to be raised again on the Day of Judgment, try to stay asleep.
Nice.
No matter how much you try and stay asleep, eventually you're going to be woken up again, right? That's the nature of our life. There are certain things which are completely inevitable. And we're not supposed to hasten those things either, like the Day of Judgment. We should recognize that, yeah, this is a reality that's going to take place. Yeah. And it will take place whenever Allah wants it to. We're not supposed to hasten that. It's not like the reappearance of Imam Mahdi, which we're supposed to, you know, actively try and hasten.
So, if I just want to wrap it all up and give the gist of whatever we've been talking about, as in today's episode, I would say that there is no moment of satisfaction, of absolute and perfect satisfaction in our lives as long as we are in this mundane world. Like, it's a world of test and conflict and sometimes miserable situations, but still life has got its own beauties. Like, yes, it's true that whenever it's peaceful, we're searching for the conflict to flourish more of ourselves, to have more fruits from our lives. And whenever we are out of storms, we just miss those storms. Like, this is the gist of what we're talking about. And this is the nature of life, of course. So thank you, brother. And thank you, dear listeners. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. And it comes out to be fruitful for you guys to think more about what's going on in our lives. So this was all for today's episode. Until another session, I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about this.
We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum.
Alhamdulillah, Rabbil Alameen. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum. Wassalamu alaikum. Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Latif. Ya Latif. Ya Latif. Ya Latif. Allah, 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 Allah.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Palestinian officials say that Israel's genocide in Gaza has so far claimed the lives of over 14,300 children, killing four children every hour. The Israeli military confirms the death of four more of its soldiers in Gaza. It says that they were killed in an ambush by resistance fighters.